I bite my lower lip, suddenly worried. I know that no matter what happens, this will end magnificently. But I also know that Damien's a master at manipulating anticipation. If he leaves me like this, wide open and ready, I just might have to scream.
"Don't worry," he says, as if he can read my mind. "I might have it in me to torment you a little bit, but tonight that would be torturing me too."
"Sadism, not masochism?" I say archly, then smile when he bursts out laughing.
"Sadism, Miss Fairchild? Let me see if I recall the definition. I believe that sadism is the deriving of sexual gratification from inflicting pain, suffering, or humiliation on another person."
He moves to the small table by the bed and opens a drawer.
"I'll admit to the sexual gratification, and I intend to be significantly more gratified before the night is over. But let's explore the rest, shall we?"
I lick my lips as he pulls a box of matches from the drawer. I trust Damien completely, but what on earth is he planning to do with matches?
"So tell me, Miss Fairchild, are you in pain?"
I swallow. I'm in very dire straits, but I'm a long way from pain.
"No." "I'm very glad to hear it."
He crosses the room, then disappears from view. A moment later, he returns carrying a thick candle, the flame flickering as he walks.
"Candle wax can be very enticing,"
he says in response to my questioning glance.
"The sensation of the quickly changing temperature, the way it tightens when it hardens on the skin. Have you ever experienced that, Ms. Fairchild?"
I shake my head. "No. I'm not certain if I'm scared or excited."
He says, as if marking my words in his memory. "Well, today, I'm interested in only one thing from this candle."
He pauses by the bed and tilts the candle so that the wax drips onto the marble surface of the decorative side table. Then, he sets the candle in the wax, letting it harden to form a stand. After that, he takes something else from the drawer. I realize only when the sconce lighting begins to dim that it's a remote control. Soon we are in darkness, bathed only by the flickering orange of a single candle.
"Oh." "Disappointed?" he asks.
"No," I say. I feel my cheeks heat. "But I might have been a little intrigued."
"Were you? I'll have to remember that.
But where were we?"
"Oh, yes. Sadism."
He eases onto the bed and kneels between my widespread legs. My breath comes in small gasps as he gently rests his hands on my thighs just above my knees, his thumbs on the soft inner skin.
"Humiliation was next, I believe. Are you humiliated, Miss Fairchild? You're exposed to me, after all. Wide open, like a blossoming flower, and so very wet." "You're beautiful, Nikki,"
he says, and I hear the raw passion in his voice.
"But are you humiliated?"
I've turned my head to the side, because the truth is that I do feel exposed. Exposed and open, and decadent and wild. I don't, however, feel humiliated. On the contrary, I feel aroused. And I think it's that odd combination of emotions that heats my cheeks with a ridiculous blush.
"No,"
I whisper.
"Look at me."
I turn my head until I can see his eyes, the amber one shining in the candlelight, and the near black one as dark as eternity.
"Not humiliated," he says. "And not suffering either, I assume?"
"No."
"Good."
His lips curve into a smile as his hands stroke my inner thighs, the pad of one thumb brushing ever so softly over the worst of my scars.
"You are exceptional, Miss Fairchild,"
he says. I could look at you forever, lose myself in you forever. I draw in a trembling breath. The muscles of my sex clench with longing, and my breasts are so heavy they are almost painful. I want to move, want to satisfy this sexual itch, but I'm stuck fast and helpless. I like that I can make you blush, he says. I swallow. Why? Because I know why you do. Really? Well, then please, Mr. Stark, share your insight. Because I have you spread open. Because you're naked before me and helpless. Because I can do anything to you right now, anything at all. And because that excites you. His hand cups my sex, and I release a moan so soft it is little more than a breath. So tell me, Miss Fairchild, if you're not in pain or suffering or humiliated, how do you feel? Turned on, I admit, and my cheeks heat even more. Even in the candlelight, I can see the way his face darkens with my words. I'm not the only one turned on right now. I start to speak, but he shakes his head. Hush now, and close your eyes. I'm going to kiss you. I comply, my lips parted in expectation of his touch. But it's not my lips upon which he presses his kiss. I feel the rough stubble of his beard on my thigh, then his tongue in the soft crease between my leg and vulva. My breath is coming in little gasps now, and whatever playfulness had been in the air mere moments ago has evaporated, replaced by want and need and quiet desperation. His mouth closes over me, his tongue laving me in a rhythm designed to drive me completely crazy. His thumbs tease me, never going so far as to enter, but combined with the erotic power of his tongue against my clit, it is a wonder that my body isn't ripped apart by the force of the sensations rocketing through me. My back is arched, my hips grinding. Instinctively, I try to close my legs, trying to forestall this tidal wave of pleasure that is so potent it borders on pain. But I can't. I am bound open, and I have no choice but to yield to these amazing sensations. Damien's hands move to hold my hips, keeping me even more immobile. I feel drunk on lust, intoxicated by desire, and I close my eyes and let my head fall back in complete surrender as Damien's mouth and tongue work some kind of erotic magic on me, taking me higher and higher, until that magic culminates in an explosion of sparks and colors and shooting stars that leave me spent and breathless. Slowly, reality returns to me, and I gasp, spread-eagled on the bed. My chest rises and falls, my body so sensitive that I can feel every thread of the sheet below me. I feel spoiled and pampered and adored and used. I am certain that all that is left is for Damien to untie me and then gather me into his arms as we drift off into the bliss of sleep. Because what else could be left for this night? He has utterly, sweetly destroyed me. I should know better than to assume anything about Damien Stark. His teeth graze my nipple, and I arch up, thoughts of sleep vanishing. I am battered, ripped asunder by his sensual assault, and yet I do not want it to end. The torment is delicious, and I would happily stay like this forever, foregoing food and friends and the world outside if I could simply escape into Damien's arms. I open my eyes as he arches up, and his self-satisfied smile suggests that he understands just what I'm thinking. Then he glances sideways, and the smile fades, replaced by a blank, unreadable expression. Worry cuts through me. Damien? Instinctively, I turn my head, my gaze following his line of sight. There is a clock mounted to the wall amid a collection of framed photographs, the few personal items that Damien has already moved into this shell of a house. Oh. Automatically, I try to sit up, but I am still trapped, bound spread-eagled to this bed, naked and vulnerable. Somehow, though, in that moment, it seems as though Damien is more vulnerable than I.
"Less than a minute,"
he says, turning his head so that he is looking straight at me again.
"Do you turn into a pumpkin, or do I?"
The words are light, but something in his tone worries me, and I am unnerved. "I don't think I'd like you as a pumpkin," I say, forcing out the teasing words. "And I look terrible in orange." He laughs, and my worries fizzle away as he straddles me, his weight on his knees and his erection rubbing provocatively on my belly. He traces my lips with the tip of his finger, and I gasp as I suddenly realize that I've forgotten to breathe. He slides down my body and grazes his finger over the platinum and emerald ankle bracelet he gave me when our game began. He looks at me, his eyes burning with passion.
"You're still mine," he whispers.
And then, before I can answer, he shifts position and enters me so swiftly that I cry out in surprise and passion. We move together, making love slowly and gently, and when I feel his body shudder above mine, I close my eyes in the feminine satisfaction of knowing that he has found pleasure in my body. He rolls off me, then curls himself beside me.
"Nikki."
It is not a demand or a question. It is simply my name on his lips, and I soak it up like warm sunshine. We lie like that, our bodies touching, until I can no longer stand my immobility.
"Untie me," I say.
He lifts his head to look at me. I still see the heat in his eyes, but there is a playfulness, too. He does not rush to release me.
"Hello," I say, then tap my fingernails on the iron bed frame.
"Did you get lost between the middle of the bed and the headboard?"
"I'm considering my options," he says. "Why should I?"
"Because my arms will cramp up soon?"
"I'll be happy to massage you."
I aim a scowl at him. "And because you have a cocktail party here on Saturday and your guests will ask questions."
"Perhaps, but won't it be nice to know that the guests will have plenty to talk about?"
As much as I hate the thought of depriving your guests of interesting conversation, I would still like my hands to be free.
"Would you?"
He trails a lazy finger down my side, and I bite my lower lip to keep from writhing. The sensation is delicious, a cross between a caress and a tickle, and my skin tingles in his wake.
"And what is it that you wish to do with your hands, Miss Fairchild?"
"Touch you," I say boldly. "I'm allowed. After all, we're on equal footing now that midnight has passed, aren't we, sir?" There is a pause before his head tilts down in a quick, formal nod.
"Yes, madam," he says as he leans past me to loosen the knots that hold my wrists in place. "We are."
Once my hands are free, I sit up while he unbinds my ankles. I pull my legs close, enjoying the sensation of moving again. Then I kneel on the bed in front of Damien, who is sitting at the foot of the bed, watching me. It's hard not to look at him. He's even more magnificent by the glow of candlelight. I reach out, wanting to feel him beneath my fingertips, wanting his warmth against my skin. Slowly, I lay my palm over his heart, then close my eyes as I feel it beat, strong and steady, like the man himself. I lay him gently back onto the bed and straddle him, my knees pressed against either side of his waist. I trail my fingers over his chest and watch the way one small muscle jumps in his jaw, evidence of how hard he is fighting for control. I smile, relishing the power he's relinquished to me. You make me feel amazing, I say. I want you to feel the same. I do, when I touch you, when I see your skin tremble with desire, when your muscles tighten and draw me in. What is it you think that you're doing to me, other than making me feel more deeply than I ever have before? But you're the one in control. I shift my hips a little, silently letting him know that I hold the control now.
No. He shakes his head. That's an illusion. It's you, Nikki. You have captured me utterly, and you hold my heart in your hands. Be gentle with it. It's more fragile than you might think.
I swallow, then blink, moved by his words. Gently, I run my fingertip over his jawline, enjoying the feel of his beard stubble against my skin. I lean over, my body pressed to his, and draw his mouth into a slow, deep kiss. What do you want? I ask once I've broken the kiss. Right now, if you could have me any way you wanted, what would you have me do?
Right now, I want you beside me, he says. I want to hold you.
His words undo me, and my throat feels thick with tears. I am weepy and emotional, and don't think I've ever been happier. Gently, I ease off him and curl up next to him. My back is to his chest, and I'm looking out at the world beyond the window as he casually strokes my arm. We have lain this way before, and it feels warm and familiar. It feels like us. I'm going to miss this bed, I admit.
I suppose I could keep it here, but it doesn't really fit the decor.
Well, if you're trying to be all traditional.
I trail off and he laughs, then pulls me tighter against him.
It's so comfortable between us, and I cherish the way that I feel with Damien. I roll over, wanting to see his face, and I'm immediately glad I do. He presses a kiss to my forehead, and we curl up on the bed facing each other. His hand is on the curve of my waist, and I trail my fingers lazily up and down his chest. He has only the slightest smattering of chest hair, and it feels downy beneath my fingers. I amuse myself by making patterns on his chest, and when I look up at him, the corner of his mouth is twitching. What? I ask.
Having fun, Miss Fairchild?
As a matter of fact, I am.
I'm glad. Earlier, the way those bastards upset you, I didn't like it.
Me neither, I say, in what is undoubtedly the understatement of the year. But I'm okay now, and you seem pretty okay yourself.
I would have happily ripped their heads off at the restaurant, he admits.
I could tell, I say, but I didn't just mean the paparazzi.
Oh?
He eyes me warily. I lift a shoulder. I'm still wondering about that call, I admit. Is something going on? I blurt, because I've been holding it in all evening and can't take it anymore. Has Carl done something? Damien doesn't answer, and I glare at him, irritated. Come on, Damien. All that stuff that Carl said. We both know it isn't going to just go away.
I hope it does just go away, Damien says, though I tend to agree.
Damien! I sound as exasperated as I feel. Just tell me straight out. Has something happened that you haven't told me about? Is that what the phone call was about?
No.
He brushes the tip of his finger over my nose. I promise. I frown as I eye him. He shifts so that I can see him better, then draws an X over his heart. I raise a brow, and he lifts three fingers in a Boy Scout salute. I hold back a laugh, and he holds up his pinky finger.
Shall we pinky swear?
That does it. I laugh and hook pinkies with him.
I swear to you, he says, lifting our joined hands and kissing the tip of my little finger. That call had nothing to do with Carl Rosenfeld. I nod. I believe him, but I'm still worried. Because whoever was on that telephone call had the ability to crack Damian Stark's cool veneer. And anyone who can do that is no one to trifle with.
Chapter 5. I open my eyes to a blanket of stars hanging beyond the doorway, uncertain as to what has awakened me. I am groggy, and I turn toward Damian, automatically seeking the soft comfort of sliding back into sleep in his arms. But instead of his warmth, I find only the rumpled coolness of abandoned sheets. I sit up, confused. I'd slept soundly, nestled safe against him, and it is disorienting to come back to the world and find myself alone. The candle has burned down, but Damian has turned the sconce lighting on low, and each fixture emits the slightest of glows, just enough to take the edge off the darkness. I glance toward the kitchen, but that area is dark and quiet. Beside me, the sheets are cool. Damian has not been here for a long time. I slide off the bed and lift the robe off the floor where it has fallen. I put it on, the gentle caress of the material seeming to mimic Damien's touch. I reach out for the bed frame and untie the sash from the iron bar. I wrap it around my waist, cinching the robe. Then I close my hand over the cool iron ball. I will be sorry to see this bed go, but its purpose is done. It was a prop, an illusion chosen for a specific effect. I tremble, struck by the sudden and unreasonable fear that everything has been an illusion, Damian most of all. But those are just ghosts. I know better. At least, I hope that I do. I recall his words in the restaurant, that he would leave me to protect me. I hug myself, suddenly cold. But I know that I am being foolish. Damian hasn't left me. He simply left the bed. Damian? I expect no answer, and I'm not surprised when none comes. The house is large, and over the last week, the workmen have finished painting the interior, and even the grounds are almost fully landscaped. There still isn't any furniture in most rooms, but even so, he could be anywhere, and in a house this large, anywhere covers a lot of ground. For a moment, I consider returning to bed and trying to sleep. He didn't wake me after all, and I wonder if he left the room to find some solitude. He told me the phone call wasn't about Carl's threats, and I don't doubt him. But the call still disturbed him, and I'm selfish enough to want to understand why. I want him to confide in me and turn to me for comfort. I want him to keep his promise to me about shining light on the shadows that surround Damian Stark. But is that my only motivation for seeking him out now? If so, I really should crawl back in bed. Promise or not, Damian is entitled to his privacy, and no matter how much it may frustrate me, the promise is his to keep or to break. My hesitation lasts only a moment, because while I do want to understand the man, I want even more to comfort him. I want to hold him and touch him, and silently promise him that no matter what he needs, I'm there for him. I want. Maybe I'm still being selfish, but I'm arrogant enough to think that Damian needs me. And yes, I'm selfish enough to go. I see that he left his phone beside the candle. I pause, thinking of the text he received, and then the phone call that came soon after. He either recognized the number, or the caller's name is programmed into his phone. Should I look? I hesitate just long enough to be disgusted by myself. If Damian went pawing through my call history, I'd explode into a completely justifiable rage. And yet, I'm actually thinking about looking at his phone? Have I been miraculously transported back to high school? The thought is undeniably unpleasant, and I forcefully push it out of my mind as I pad to the service elevator at the back of the kitchen.
It opens on the first floor in a utility room off the main kitchen, a magnificent space filled with commercial-grade equipment that hasn't yet been used. I pass through the kitchen into a sun porch. I expect to find him in the gym that eats up at least 1,000 square feet on the north side of the house. But when I get there, there is no Damien. The room is large and divided into distinct sections. The first one I come to is a weight room, filled with machines, free weights, mats, and a boxing bag. I move quickly across the room to the functional but beautiful polished oak door that separates this room from the larger area beyond. In this second room, there is a running track, complete with stations, more free weights, pull-up bars, spin bicycles, another boxing bag, and a variety of other equipment. As is Damien's style, an entire wall of the track room is made of glass, giving a view of the property and the ocean beyond. The negative edge pool opens off the living room on the main level, but it is also accessible from the gym, with one of the glass pocket doors opening onto the deck. From where I stand, I don't have a view of the water, but at least one of the pool's dim lights must be on, as I see the greenish-blue light undulating on the deck. For a moment, I think nothing of it. Damien has left the light on since the pool was filled 3 days ago, ever since I mentioned that as a child I loved to sit by the pool at night with my sister and watch the light dance as the wind played across the water's surface. Right now, however, there is no wind. Even the 3 drapes that Damien left unmolested had been still when I'd awakened, and the dancing light is moving in a rhythmic, controlled pattern. I smile, knowing that I have found him. I head to the glass door, but pause when I see the small table next to the boxing bag. A bottle of water rests atop the table, but that isn't what catches my eye. It's the newspaper that is on the floor. Reviewing the news is like a religion with Damien, but I've never once seen him not fold the paper neatly when he's finished. This section, however, is on the ground. I suppose it could have simply fallen there, but somehow I don't believe it. I pick up the errant sheet and immediately realize it's the sports page. Considering Damien's original career as a professional tennis player, this is hardly a shocker. But it's the headline that has me gasping with surprise and with understanding. Apparently, a new tennis center in Los Angeles is near completion. The dedication ceremony is next Friday, exactly 1 week away, and the center is going to be named after Damien's former coach, Merle Richter, the man who killed himself when Damien was 14 years old, the man who, I believe, abused Damien for 5 long years, the man Damien's father forced him to continue working with even though Damien pleaded to quit tennis altogether. I remember what Alain had said about a tennis center dedication. It had meant nothing to me at the time. Now, it means everything. I leave the paper on the table, then exit the room through the sliding glass door. The flagstone decking is smooth beneath my feet, and the robe flutters around my legs as I move toward the pool. The property is built in the Malibu Hills, and the pool's far edge is designed with the illusion of dropping away, as if you could swim over the edge and fall out into space. Damien is swimming laps along that precipice, and I wonder if he has chosen that spot intentionally. He is naked, and the pool lighting seems to accentuate his muscles as he glides freestyle through the water. His body is magnificent, athletic, and powerful, and I feel a tight curling in my belly. Not sexual, though I would be lying if I didn't admit that there is always an undercurrent of sexual desire where Damien is concerned, but of possessiveness. He is mine, I think. But the thought is tinged with fear, because though I know that the reverse is true, I am most definitely, undeniably his, I sometimes fear that Damien belongs to no one but himself. I fear, too, my motivations for giving myself so fully to him. Damien fills a need in me, that much is undeniable. but I do not have the best track record in that regard. And as my hand slips almost unconsciously inside my robe to feel the rigid hardness of the scars that mar my thigh, I have to concede that I have often needed things that are not only bad for me, but very, very dangerous. Right now, though, I don't care about my motivations. I neither know nor care if it's the truth or self-delusion, but I cannot believe that anything about Damien is a danger to me. On the contrary, he is a gift, a rescuer, a knight upon a white steed, though he would scoff at the image and insist that the horse must be a black one. Perhaps so, but to me there is nothing dark about Damien Stark. There is only the light that he brings to my world. And that is why I feel all the more helpless when I see that he is hurting, and why I feel all the more lost when it is not me that he turns to. I've been walking slowly toward the water, and now I stand at the edge of the pool on the side near the house. There are 5 steps into the water here, wide steps designed for lounging half in and half out of the water. I walk out, holding the robe up around my knees so that it won't get wet. Damien is at the opposite end of the pool, and he has not noticed me. I take 3 steps, then move down to the next level. The water hits me just below my knees. This is the first time I've been in the pool, and I'm surprised by how warm the water is. Not quite bath temperature, but balmy and warmer than the night air that surrounds me. I walk to the edge of the second level and look out toward the man who has captured my heart. My feet are about 12 inches below the pool deck now, and from this new perspective, all I can see is Damien, the water, and the wide night sky. I watch, entranced, as he cuts through the water. His movements are efficient and controlled, just like the man himself. I don't realize that I've moved to the 3rd step until I notice that I am no longer holding up the robe. Instead, the thin material is spread out like the petals of a rose floating on the gently lapping surface. I am about to take it off and lay it on the decking when Damien stops midway through a lap. He treads water, his body turned toward me, but the shadows and light that play across his face, reflected by the motion of the water, make it impossible for me to read his expression. All I know is that I feel the heavy weight of his gaze upon me, and though I want to cut through the water and go to him, I remain rooted to the spot. It's fear keeping me here. I'm afraid that I have overstepped my bounds, that I'm interrupting a moment when he needs to be alone, and that instead of comforting him, my presence is going to have the exact opposite effect. The longer he stays at the far end of the pool, the more that fear grows in me, so that when he finally does move toward me, I take an involuntary step backward. It is only when I see his face that I stop. He is looking at me with such open adoration that it makes my heart skip a beat. He stops swimming and stands in the chest-deep water.
I didn't mean to wake you.
How do you expect me to sleep without you beside me? I've moved forward again, and the robe floats around me. Damien eases closer, cutting through the water, then tugs on the sash at my waist. The robe drifts open, exposing my body. He slips his hands up to my shoulders and slides it off. The damp material sticks to my arms, but I move forward, leaving the robe behind me until I am no longer wrapped in silk, but wrapped in Damien's arms. I think I ruined the robe, I say. I didn't actually mean to wear it into the pool. I was watching you and got carried away.
I know the feeling.
His hand gently strokes my face while his other arm holds me firmly around the waist, as if afraid I'll float away like the robe. Do you mind that I'm here? His mouth curves into an ironic smile, and he pulls me closer. I feel his erection press against my thighs.
What do you think?
I swallow and shake my head. But it's not sex that I've come here for, though with Damien standing naked and erect next to me, I am having a hard time recalling what my purpose actually was. But no, I do remember. I tilt my head up so that I can look directly in his eyes. I was worried, I admit.
About the phone call? I told you it wasn't about Carl's threats.
I nod, then take a deep breath. Was it about the tennis center? He looks at me sharply.
You know about that?
Is that what's bothering you? He hesitates, then gives one curt nod.
Yes.
I bite my lip, because though I believe him, I'm certain that's not the full story.
How did you learn about it?
I saw the paper. You left it by the boxing bag. The corner of his mouth tugs upward.
Perhaps my subconscious wanted you to find it.
Well, I say with a laugh, that's a start. As I had hoped, he laughs as well. Then his shoulders relax, and he pulls me closer, his arms closing around me in a tight hug. I sigh and put my arms around his neck, then bury my head against his chest.
I'm not a fan of Richter, he says. The idea that a professional tennis facility will bear his name pisses me off.
Can't you do something?
I could buy the goddamn center, he says, but I won't.
I want to look at his face, but I don't move. I've told him that I suspect abuse, but he's never told me if I'm right or not. I stay very still, wondering if now is the time when Damien Stark will reveal his secrets to me.
The call that upset me, he begins. It was from my father.
Oh. I'm surprised enough that I do move, leaning back so that my weight is supported by his arms as I look into his face. It's hard, and there's something dark in his eyes. I'd been right about his earlier hesitation, and this is the reason why. The topic of Damien's father is never an easy one. I know they aren't close. I know that Damien's father pushed him to compete, the same way my mother pushed me into pageant after pageant. I know all that because Damien has told me. But what I suspect is truly vile. I believe that Richter was abusing Damien, and that Damien's father knew. But he forced Damien to stay with the son of a bitch anyway. I swallow and then speak the words that I know I shouldn't. Do you want to talk about it?
No.
The word is simple and final. Right. Okay. I try to keep my voice casual, but I know I've failed when he presses his forehead against mine, his hands firm on my shoulders.
I know it bothers you, he says, and I'm sorry.
I start to protest. Every proper Nikki attribute that was pounded into my head by my mother is ready to burst out and reassure him that no, really, it's fine that he's keeping secrets, fine that he doesn't want to talk to me, fine that though I now turn to him for comfort, he leaves our bed in the middle of the night to find solace in solitude. Proper Nikki wants to say all of that. But I mentally shove my heel hard into the blonde twit's ass. I take a deep breath, and this time it's not proper Nikki or rebel Nikki or social Nikki. It's just me, wishing that I had some magic formula to make everything better for Damien, whether he tells me the truth or not. It does bother me, I admit, but only because I don't like to see you wounded.
And here I thought I hid my scars so well.
He is only half teasing. You do, I say. But you're talking to an expert at hiding scars. I see them even if no one else does. And I know how much it helped me to talk to you, to know that I could borrow your strength if my own wasn't enough. He starts to speak, but I press a soft finger over his lips and shake my head. I mean it when I say that I want to be there for you, Damien. but saying it that way makes me sound more altruistic than I am. I take a deep breath because honesty is never as easy as it should be. The truth is that it feels unfair. I've shared everything with you, but you still keep so many things locked up tight.
Nikki,
no, I interrupt. This isn't a demand or an accusation. It's an apology, because it was my choice to tell you, and it's unfair of me to be irritated because you haven't made the same choice. It's not like we're playing follow the leader.
No,
he agrees, and I see the faintest hint of a smile touch his lips.
But considering how much I enjoyed our game of Simon Says, perhaps we should add that one to our repertoire.
I cock my head and grimace. I'm serious.
I know you are.
He pauses.
Thank you.
I look at him, at this man who commands an empire. But right now, the power and the fame and the money mean nothing. He is just a man. My man. And in that moment, I must acknowledge the truth that has gone unspoken and unexamined for so long. I am falling in love with Damian Stark. The thought doesn't scare me. On the contrary, it makes me smile. He matches my grin, then brushes his fingertip over my lower lip. I open my mouth, drawing him in, tasting the chlorine and the soft comfort of Damian's skin.
What are you thinking about?
You, I admit. Always you.
What about me?
I allow my smile to widen. Close your eyes, Mr. Stark, and I'll show you. His brow lifts, but he complies, and I move closer, then stroke my fingers over his slick, wet chest. I'm going to make love to you, Damian. My words are so full of emotion, they feel too big for my throat. I'm going to take your mind off everything that's bothering you, and a lot more effectively than swimming laps. It's late, after 3, and I'm tired. I'm a bit sore, too, but it doesn't matter, because I need this moment with Damian. I need to take care of him now, to stroke and soothe him. I need it, and I desperately hope that he needs me too. I press a soft kiss to his temple, then ease down, trailing kisses down his neck, then his chest. We're standing close together in waist-high water, and his erection presses against my thigh as if in silent demand. I want to shift and capture him between my legs, to use the buoyancy of the water to rise up and then sink back down again, impaling myself upon him. I don't, though. Not yet. Instead, I slide my hands down over his back, breaking the surface to cup his perfect ass beneath the water, then continue my oral exploration, lower and lower, until I'm tasting the lapping water along with the smooth skin of his tight lower abs. I tilt my head to look at his face and find that he's cheating. His eyes are open, but he's looking at me so tenderly that I cannot chastise him. Instead, I allow myself one tiny smile, then slip beneath the water. I hold his hips to keep me in place and run my tongue along his cock. I've never done anything like this before. And the sensation of moving water, coupled with the taste of chlorine and Damian, seems sweetly wicked somehow. I want to draw him into my mouth, but I'm afraid of swallowing water, and so I satisfy myself with simply dancing my tongue and lips over his hard, beautiful cock. I can't see him, but I know that the sensations are equally arousing to him. He's becoming even harder under my ministrations, and the tension tightening in his body seems to shoot through him and into my hands as I hold tight to his bare, wet skin. I rise up, needing both air and his kiss. I break the surface, gasping, and then press my mouth against his. His lips part, drawing me in, his tongue warring with mine as he takes control of the kiss. His lips are hard against my mouth, his tongue hot and demanding, and so very thorough that there is no question that I have gone from being the seductress to being the seduced. I'm only vaguely aware that he has moved us to the side of the pool. Now he breaks the kiss and turns me roughly around. I can feel my ribs beneath his hands, and I am struck by how strong he is and how fragile I am. He possessively skims his hands up to cup my breasts as his erection nestles against my ass. The cool air brushes my damp skin, but I hardly feel it. I am hot. Hell, I am burning. I may have started this with the comforting warmth of glowing coals in mind, but I can already tell that Damien's finish will be scorching.
"Tell me you trust me," he whispers. "You know that I do. Tell me I can take you however I want to."
I close my eyes and pull my lips into a smile.
"Oh, yes.
I'm going to make you shatter, Nikki," he says, as he takes one hand from my breast.
He slips it between my legs, urging my thighs apart as he teases my sex with his fingers.
"I want to feel my hands on you when you explode, and I want to know that I'm the one who gave that to you. Every breath, every ripple of pleasure, every ache in your cunt, every bite mark on your back. Me, I did that."
My body shudders simply from the words and the anticipation of their fulfillment.
"Hold on to the side of the pool," he orders,
and as soon as I comply, he shifts his position and enters me from behind, gently at first, and then with a hard thrust that makes me gasp as water sloshes around us and my vagina clenches around him. I'm sore, but it doesn't matter. I shift my hips, wanting more and more of him. One of his hands seeks to soothe my need for an additional touch, and it snakes around, finding my breast, squeezing my nipple so hard that it makes my sex clench even tighter around him. And then fingers are teasing their way down, down, until he brushes over my clit, and I bite my lower lip in the expectation that, yes, he is going to let me come. But not yet. This is Damien's show, Damien's game, and he is playing by his rules tonight. Soon, he has withdrawn his cock from my vagina and his hand from my clit. I am bereft, lost without his touch, and I turn in his arms, intending to beg, then grateful to realize that I don't have to, because he's pulling me to him once again, demanding that I rise up, that I let the water do the work, that I wrap my legs around him and sink down deeper and deeper on his cock. His hands on my ass support me, and I gasp in surprise and pleasure as he slides one finger down to our connected bodies, then rims my anus with a finger slick with pool water and my own arousal.
"Everywhere, Nikki."
There is a rawness in his voice, a need that seems to edge close to desperation, and as he speaks, he thrusts forward with his hips, at the same time pulling me down, impaling me hard against him, even as his finger slips inside my ass. I'm impossibly full, and the erotic sensation of having both his cock and finger inside me is almost more than I can handle. But Damien is relentless, and the force of his pounding has edged us backward, so that my back scrapes hard against the pool's edge, and the water is as wild as a stormy sea.
"Forever," he growls,
His voice is rough, his actions more so. His thrusts are deep and violent. He is pounding into me, thrusting me wildly against the edge of the pool, my bare back scraping against the stone coping. Between my already sore sex, the assault on my back, and the tender flesh that his finger is so brutally invading, yes, he is hurting me. I bite my lip because I don't want to cry out. I don't know why he needs this, but I know that he does. Before, he was gentle. Even his spanks were inflicted only for the purpose of pleasing me. This, however, is about Damien. Damien taking. Damien needing. It is me that he needs, and I give myself willingly. I am no stranger to pain. It gives me control, something tangible to hold on to. And I can take Damien's pain and pull it tight inside me like a precious thing. I think I understand what Damien needs. Not the pain, but the control. He needs to claim me. Maybe he can't grab hold of the ghosts from his past that have returned to haunt him, but he has me. Right now, I am his to touch and possess. His to claim and use. His. Simply Damien's. His release comes hard and fast, and I wrap my arms tight around his neck until the last shudder rips through him. He softens and slips out of me, first his cock, then his finger. I ease off him and find my footing, leaning back against the edge of the pool and breathing hard. After a moment, he opens his eyes and looks at me. One moment passes, then another, and then I see the storm approaching.
God damn it, he says. Nikki, I...
No. I stroke his cheek. No. I repeat. Don't you get it? I want to be there for you. All of you. Whatever you need. For a moment, he is silent.
Did I hurt you?
He finally asks, his voice flat. No. It's only a little lie. Already the sharp pain is past. I'm sore, yes, but it's a pleasant feeling. A reminder of Damien. No. I repeat. You felt wonderful. I don't think he believes me, but he leads me to the steps and out of the pool. We towel off in silence. When I'm dry, he picks me up without asking and carries me back inside. He places me gently onto our bed on the third floor, then gets in beside me. He doesn't speak, and neither do I. Instead, I move to snuggle against him. I know that he is still disturbed, as much because he thinks he hurt me as because he lost control. I, however, feel the opposite. He's lost control with me, and that is almost like sharing a secret. The thought makes me smile, and I close my eyes and sigh deeply. Sore, yes, but sweetly content. I'm on the verge of falling asleep when his soft words wash over me.
My father intends to go to the dedication.
Oh, I say. It's all that I can manage, though I am fully awake now, and I rise up onto my elbow to face him.
I won't be there. Richter was a balls-out bastard, and I won't support the decision to honor him, not even in the smallest way.
Of course he won't go.
I'm glad you understand.
I'm glad you have the balls to stand up to your father. I don't think I could ignore an edict from my mother.
I bet you could, he says. You're stronger than you think.
I don't answer. Instead, I search his face. And the tennis center thing is all that's been bugging you? Truly?
Yes, he says.
Am I imagining the hesitation? Am I so used to Damien's secrets that I'm seeing them when they're no longer there?
Yes, he said. And I decide to believe him.
At the very least, he has opened a door. But Damien Stark, like this house, has many rooms, and I can't help but wonder how many doors remain shut and locked. Chapter 6. I wake in the morning to the scent of brewing coffee and fresh-baked croissants, and when I peel my eyes open, I find Damien beside the bed holding a tray, which I immediately identify as the source of those mouth-watering scents. "What's all this?" I ask.
"A woman heading off to the first day of a new job deserves breakfast in bed," he says, setting the tray across my lap as soon as I've sat up and scooted back.
I take a sip of the coffee, then sigh as the elixir begins to work its magic. "What time is it?"
"Just past 6, he says, and I stifle a groan. "When are you supposed to be at work?"
10, I say. Bruce is having me start on a Friday since it's going to be a day of paperwork and getting my feet wet. Probably the last truly relaxing week I'll have for a long time. Monday I'll be dragging myself in by 8, I'm sure.
"Don't even pretend to complain. You know you love it."
He sits on the bed beside me and takes a sip from my mug. I don't think he even realizes that he's done it, but I can't help but smile at the casual intimacy. As for loving the work, he's right. I'd moved to Los Angeles less than a month ago, planning to take the tech world by storm. My job at Carl's company, C-Squared, turned out to be a bust, but I'm giddy about my new position at Innovative Resources, a company that does equally fine work with a less psychotic boss. I spread some strawberry jam on the croissant and take a bite, surprised to find that it's warm and flaky and just about melts in my mouth. "Where did you get fresh croissants?" I cannot believe that his morning jog took him into town, and these are not heated-up frozen pastries.
"Edward," Damien says, referring to his driver.
"Thank him for me."
"You can thank him yourself. Unless you're planning to walk to work, he'll be giving you a lift."
"Not you?"
"While I would love to carpool with you, I'm afraid that's not possible today."
He leans close, and I expect a kiss. Instead, his hand closes over mine, and he very deliberately brings the croissant to his mouth and takes a bite. He grins at me, his eyes dancing like a mischievous child.
"You're right," he says. "Delicious."
"You owe me now, mister. You can't expect to steal a woman's pastry and get away with it."
"I look forward to your just and severe punishment," he says, standing.
He holds out his hand to me.
"Or perhaps I could make it up to you in the shower."
"I don't think so," I say archly. "I don't want to be late for my first day."
"I thought you weren't due in until 10.
I nod as I finish the croissant and wash it down with another slug of coffee. "I'm not, but I need to get home and get dressed." I shoot him a wicked smile. "And I need to shower off last night's sex."
"That's a very sad thought," he says. "Of course, if you insist on taking such drastic action, I did offer to share my shower."
I look him up and down. He's clean-shaven and dressed in neatly pressed slacks and his usual white button-down shirt. His jacket is laid across the foot of the bed, and I can even smell the soapy fresh scent of him. "Looks like you managed just fine without me," I say.
"Never."
The word is heavy with meaning.
"And for you, I'm willing to get doubly clean."
"Tempting," I admit, as I push the tray away and slide out of bed. The air is cool, but it feels good against my still Damien-sensitive skin. "But don't you have work to do? Things to merge? Cutting-edge technology to acquire? Perhaps a galaxy to purchase?" He holds a robe open for me to slip on. It's not the red one that I soaked in the pool, and I wonder how many robes he has stocked in that closet.
"I did that last week. Apparently, there's nothing left to buy."
"Poor you." I twist in his arms and plant a gentle kiss on his chin as he tightens the sash around my waist. Just like Alexander, no world's left to conquer. He slides his hand up my silk-covered arm, and I shiver from the touch.
I assure you that I am very content with my conquests.
The heated look in his eyes shifts to something more calculating.
Although you are right, I have a day full of meetings in Palm Springs, starting at 8.
I gape at him. And you were offering me a shower? What would you have done if I'd taken you up on that?
I would have enjoyed myself very much, I assure you.
And been late for the meeting.
I'm rather confident they can't start without me. That is not, however, an excuse to be late.
As if on cue, a loud rush fills my ears, and the house seems to vibrate.
What is... my ride,
Damien says, as a helicopter appears below the roofline and continues its descent below the balcony. I hurry outside and watch as the helicopter lands on a flat, grassy area of the yard. I turn and look at Damien.
What?
I say. You couldn't afford a proper helipad?
On the contrary, you're looking at a state-of-the-art, eco-friendly, reinforced turf landing platform.
I blink at him.
Seriously? It's quite revolutionary, I assure you. The ground is prepped with a high tensile strength mesh system that creates an anchored root system, providing a surface area with remarkable load-bearing capacity. And because the Malibu Hills are prone to mudslides, I've taken additional precautions and strengthened the area with a buried grid system into which that root area blends. The result is pretty damned impressive.
If you do say so yourself. He smirks.
I'm afraid this isn't one of my projects. Not yet, anyway. I've begun talks with the company that holds the patent on the mesh technology.
To acquire the company?
Perhaps. Or maybe I'll simply be a silent partner.
He fixes me with a steady look.
Not all of my business ventures involve my fingers in the pie.
I ignore the unstated message. I want the million that I earned posing for the portrait in order to seed my business, a business I intend to kick into gear once I feel like I'm ready. Damien wants to help me, and he thinks I'm ready now. It's not a discussion that I'm diving back into now, but he presses on.
You're ready, Nikki. You can do this.
Surprisingly, I think I'm a better judge of my ability than you are, I say, more sharply than I intend.
Willingness, yes. Ability, no. That's a much more objective criterion, and I see more clearly than you do. You're too close to the subject in question. Let's examine the evidence, shall we?
I cross my arms over my chest and scowl at him, but he presses on.
You already have two reasonably profitable smartphone apps on the market, fully designed, marketed, and supported by you and you alone. You accomplished that entrepreneurial feat when you were still in college. So that, in and of itself, indicates the kind of self-sufficiency a successful business owner needs. Your degrees in electrical engineering and computer science are only icing on the cake. But your invitation into PhD programs at both MIT and Caltech demonstrate that I'm not the only one who sees your worth.
But I turned down the programs.
So that you could work in the real world and gain experience.
I can see that I'm not going to win.